Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
I took my love, took it down. I climbed a mountain and I turned around. And I saw my reflection in the snow.
We're back. It's 12 after. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate. My website is www.jbsba.com. Don't forget all the things you can do on my site. It's a little bit of small business heaven. I think you'll find that to be true. And don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. Ladies and gentlemen, over the years, you've heard me make a comment that you probably thought was a bold statement. Maybe you didn't think I was correct. But I have said that one of the biggest deficiencies that small business owners have is their failure to prepare and present the proposals to their customers, to their prospects. And I have said many times that if you show me 100 companies that say proposals don't work in their industry or nobody in their industry uses proposals, and I'll show you 99 who should be doing it. And that's the reason when I see a book like the one I'm holding in my hand, Powerful Proposals by David Pugh and Terry Bacon. These are guys who agree with me. And so, you know me, anytime I get somebody to agree with me about a topic, I'm going to get them on the show. David is a recognized authority in marketing and business development and creating in the creation of business proposals. And he's the co-author of this book. David, welcome back. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
It's good to have you here. What do you think about my 99 out of 100 thought there?
Well, I couldn't agree more, frankly. And as you said, it's always a delight to chat with someone who agrees with you.
It's obviously that you're highly intelligent.
I couldn't agree more because, frankly, way too much selling is done orally. The proposal, when it's done well, in fact, extends the oral communication between seller and buyer. But it does more than extend it; it formalizes it. And it becomes tangible at that point. And it's something that is, while it is not a contract, becomes the basis for a contract. And I think that's just one of the most significant ways that you can build that trust and credibility that are so critical to selling today.
You know, David, two things that I think about when I remember my days and when I was out on the pavement every day selling. I still sell today, but not like I used to. Not like when I was on commission and working my way through college and raising a family and that sort of thing. And two things come to mind. I remember the proposals. I always think of proposals as a worker bee that you leave behind.
Mm-hmm.
It keeps on working. And I remember all the times that I would get a phone call and someone would say, Jim, I don't know if you remember, but about 4 years ago, you brought me a proposal for something. And I didn't do it then, but I went back and I got it out of my – I was looking through some files and I found it. He said, can I still do this?
Mm-hmm.
Now, that year, I made that sale at that point, and I didn't have to do that work that year.
That's right.
I'd already done the work, and this was like a little bonus. That's one thing. It's a worker bee you leave behind. Number two, it can be a significant credential. And here's one that you may never have heard about, David, before. I used to actually have customers who would, they had so many of my proposals that I became like their proposal expert.
Mm-hmm.
And when a competitor would bring them a proposal, they would call me up and say, and I had their business. My proposal, my competitor was trying to root me out. And they would call me and say, Jim, I've got a proposal from one of your competitors. Would you come over here and help me see if it's a better deal or not? Now, that is a level of relationship that only a proposal can get you to.
That's right. And that's the trust and credibility that I was talking about. And, Jim, if I could just more or less expand on something you said, and that is that the proposal is a leave behind. And it's a much better leave behind than a generic brochure filled with pretty pictures.
It's a worker bee.
It's a worker bee because you leave behind a pretty picture brochure, that customer isn't going to buy pretty pictures.
Right.
And secondly, that brochure is almost always focused on the seller rather than on the buyer. And the difference between the brochure and the proposal fundamentally is that the proposal is focused on the buyer and what the buyer needs.
Exactly. Now, in your book, you talk about something called proposal DNA. What do you mean by that?
Well, basically, we discuss the proposal DNA as being the fact that the proposal no matter what you're selling, it is not a, for example, a technical document. It is not an engineering treatise. It is not just simply a product description or a service description. It's not simply a recitation of performance data. While a proposal may contain some of those things, the DNA of a proposal is that it is a selling document. And if you understand the proposal is a selling document, then the next question that you need an answer to is, what exactly am I selling? And the only way to answer that is to ask another question. What is the customer buying?
Mm-hmm.
So if, in fact, you're selling, let's say, a high-technology consumer product, it's got a very high-speed processing chip in it. The customer is not buying that speed, even though that's a dazzling datum on the product. The customer is buying what that speed will do for him.
Mm-hmm.
So, in
which
fact,
which
hopefully we've identified. In fact, if I don't have an answer to what does that speed do for the customer, then I'm not prepared to sell the product.
Well, I'm not selling anything but a commodity at that point. Then,
absolutely.
And they could do that by just making a phone call and saying, "How much is this today?"
Exactly, because if it is a commodity, whether it is or not is determined by how the buyer perceives it. And if the buyer perceives it as a commodity, then low price is the only driver of the buy.
That's right. And as my audience knows, David, as I've said 1,000 times on this show, and I'll say it 1,000 times more if I get a chance, the price war is over and small mm-hmm. business owners lost.
That's right.
That's absolutely correct. Let's talk about the components of a good proposal.
Okay.
Give us an idea.
Well, one of the most fundamentally powerful components of a great proposal is, in a certain odd sense, not the proposal itself, but what we would call the executive summary.
Yeah.
There are people in the buying process who will not take the time or the effort to read an entire proposal. They will, however, take a good hard look at what we call the executive summary.
Mm-hmm.
And the executive summary is essentially your best answers to 4 questions. Why us? Why not them? So what? And how so?
Mm-hmm.
Those are the 4 questions that a great executive summary will address for the buyer. Other than that, the proposal itself, one of the greatest elements of it is that DNA approach that says, I'm not simply describing whatever I'm trying to sell, be it a product or a service. I'm not simply describing it, I have to sell it. And that
right.
means that I have to convert it into the benefits the customer can appreciate.
David Pugh, stand by. We're going to take a quick break, folks. It's 20 after. We'll be right back with David Pugh after these messages. He is the co-author, along with Terry Bacon, of the new book, Powerful Proposals. And I recommend it to you. After the hour, I'm Jim Blassingame. We're visiting with our new friend David Pugh. He's the co-author of Powerful Proposals. David, where's your book available, please?
That book is available everywhere now, in bookstores, certainly online on such services as Amazon and the other major books retailers who have websites. So it's readily available. You can even order it from my company if you want to.
And tell us how we do that.
You would simply go to our website, which is Lorenet, LORENET.com, and
right.
follow the instructions on ordering the book.
And this is not your first rodeo, is it, David? You've been talking about proposals for a long time, haven't you?
Well, yes. Terry and I, my co-author, we've been thought partners as well as business partners for over 20 years.
Yeah.
And we've been working on various proposal approaches for over 20 years, both in large businesses doing complex selling. We worked with the winning contractor for the space station.
Wow, congratulations.
Down to small business proposals of the type that we're talking about here.
Well, and so, folks, that's the reason why we've got David on the show here, because I knew he'd have some important things to tell us. I want to get back to this executive summary thing. I think an executive summary, David, and I've been doing them for 30 years.
Okay.
I think an executive summary is one of the most powerful documents in the marketplace.
Mm-hmm.
And the way I always did an executive summary was I used it for three reasons. Number one, it was the preamble to the proposal.
Yeah.
Number two, it re-identified all the things that my customer had told me and that I was and it briefly identified how I was going to answer the things that he or she had told me that they wanted and you know that sort of thing. And so it brought that into a nugget kind of a situation, and it was used by I knew it would be used by decision makers who didn't want to read the whole thing.
Right.
They just sort of wanted to see what has been going on, and do they in general agree with the decision that's being made? Maybe they're making the final decision, but they're relying on other people to go through the technical stuff. And so this is a way for them to take care of that. But in general, an executive summary is I did everything I could do to make it on one page, but never more than two, and typically 1 to 1.5 pages. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you're right on target, Jim. I would only embellish one of your approaches to say that we try to design an executive summary according to what we know are this client or customer's key issues in making the purchase.
Right.
What's keeping that decision maker awake at night? Is it price? Is it quality? Is it reliability? Is it state-of-the-art performance? Is it whatever? Those are what we call the key issues. And we would actually organize the executive summary to address each of those key issues. And in addressing them, answer those four questions I discussed before the break.
Mm-hmm.
Why us? Why not them? So what and how so? Now, when I say why not them, I'm not suggesting for a moment that you would badmouth your competition in the proposal. You do that. It's a process called ghosting. You actually give the client compelling reasons to choose you and equally compelling reasons not to choose anyone else without ever mentioning them by name.
Mm-hmm.
So if, in fact, your product has highest reliability ratings of 125,000 mean time between failure hours, you sensitize your customer to the importance of what that reliability gives them,
mm-hmm.
and that urges them indirectly to check out the reliability of other offerings and find them wanting.
You know, one of the things that I think troubles some people about an executive summary and the body of the proposal is it bothers some people to be redundant. To say something the second, maybe even the third time in a proposal, there's nothing wrong with that, is there?
Not only is there nothing wrong with it, there are several things
right
with it. Because redundancy, and sometimes it's not redundancy word for word verbatim, but it's essentially the bolero approach. If you know that great piece of classical music, mm-hmm. it's 18 repetitions on a theme.
Right.
No two are alike, but it's still the same message over and over again.
Right, exactly. And that's a good point. And that's the thing. I know that whenever I work with people on proposals over the years, they say, well, haven't we already said this? I said, yes, we said it another way. And in the executive summary, we said it in a short paragraph. This is a page and a half on this topic for the people who want to get over into the weeds.
That's right. And, you know, one of the more interesting aspects of proposal work over the years is when you suddenly wake up one morning and realize that in almost every case, no one's going to read your proposal word for word.
Right.
What they're going to remember are the two or three main messages, often delivered by repetition, that makes the difference between what you're providing and what your competitor is providing.
Right. David, we got about 40 seconds. What are your last thoughts on proposals? And by the way, we're going to get you back. We got more to talk about. So give us, for today, what's your last thoughts?
You have to always keep in mind what we call the DNA of the proposal. It is not simply a description of the offer, be it product or service or some combination of the two. It's what that offer will do for the customer in terms of the benefits. And all we do in proposals too often is simply describe the offer in terms of its features. And until we convert those features into benefits to answer the question, what will it do for me?
Mm-hmm.
How will it impact my business? We're not doing good proposals.
Right. The proposal's got to make the customer say, oh, this is what's in it for me.
Exactly. And this is the impact it will have on my needs.
Mm-hmm. And it's got to sell, too, folks. Don't forget that. It's a proposal, as David says, is primarily, first and foremost, a selling document. David, we're going to get you back another day and talk about this some more. This is good stuff.
I'd love to do it.
Give us your website one more time, quickly.
Lorenet.com.
Thanks, David. See you next time.
Thanks a lot.
Quick break. Right back with Leslie Baines. This show is brought to you by IBM and Office Depot.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.